once again to What's on Your Mind. I have a question today because I'm sitting here going bananas trying to figure out which of the clips we should play from last night's Republican National Committee. I've reread some of these speeches. There's a lot of heft in these speeches. There really is, which I guess is why the left is going crazy. But I can't determine a favorite. So if you have a favorite, let me know, and maybe we'll get a little consensus, and we'll play the whole dang speech. The whole works. All right? You have a favorite, Kev? From last night, one that really sticks out?
The young Kentucky AG,
Me too.
Really enjoyed him.
We're building on a consensus. Daniel Cameron is his name.
Daniel Cameron. I don't have chains, Mr. Biden.
Yeah. By the way, he's not a black man anymore now, according to the black critics.
Right?
Yeah. Former black man.
You know what I really liked? And you talked about it yesterday. I liked the feature that they did with all of the women and that the president has around him and that he has appointed. And
yeah, that was good.
That almost gave me a moment just thinking about how many people say he hates women. You know, I'm watching these amazing women go, no, he's awesome. We love him.
What I don't know is how many persuadable voters watch this.
I know, right?
You know, I don't know if they sit down and say, okay, I'm going to have an open mind here and I'm going to look at both sides. I don't know. I know the viewership has been, I guess, pretty good. For Republicans so far, a little less so for the Democrats, but I don't know who. But if you're watching and you haven't decided, you know, I got to think this is very powerful. I love the people you've never heard of before. I didn't know who the Attorney General of Kentucky was before last night. I mean, he's been in the news, for things there before, but I didn't know who it was and gave a great speech, you know. I don't know how many people remember Nicholas Sandman, but I thought that was great. Here's this kid that was the subject of fake news.
Oh, I felt so bad for him when that was going on.
Yeah, and Melania Trump too. You know, honestly, it's challenging to hear every word because of her accent. I'm just being honest. I love the woman. I think she's a great story, but you really have to lean in. But if you actually do lean in and listen, there's some you know, go back and read the actual speech. It's pretty incredible.
Absolutely.
And her own story is phenomenal.
Yep.
Her own story. You know, you know what else? She triggers the left. I don't know what the deal is. Is it because she's an immigrant? Is it because she's beautiful and married to Donald Trump and they hate him? They see him as a monster, so woman that's beautiful married to guy and they got to hate her then?
Yep, she's a token wife.
Is that the deal?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yep, she's a gold digger, trophy wife, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, Bette Midler said some horrible thing about her not being able to speak English on Twitter.
What a vile.
You know?
Whatever.
Yeah, and I mean, she has an accent. There's no doubt about that. But you can't, I mean, no Republican could say that about a liberal and get by with it.
Oh, that goes for so much across the board.
I think that stuff helps.
You can't.
When crazy Hollywood people get stupid, when crazy activists say, well, you're not a black man anymore, I don't think that helps anybody. I really don't. I mean, you're not motivated to go, yeah, you're right. You're right. That guy shouldn't be saying that stuff. He's black. I'm not. So, I don't know. Daniel Cameron will put tops on the list, though, since you and I agree on that one, and we'll welcome others. You can call us at 701-271-1100. You can text me at 701-367-2054 as well. Coming up on the program, a woman by the name of D'Amico Pawlowitz is going to join us. She's an assistant professor in educational foundations and research at the University of North Dakota. And we have experts on from time to time from the University of North Dakota. She's written a book called Blaming Teachers. That's what got our attention. And she is saying the gist of what she says is that professionalization, I didn't even know that word existed, but did you know professionalization?
No.
Of teachers is something she sees. She says, look, that helped doctors, it helped lawyers. They got higher status, higher paying jobs, while landing teachers on only the bottom rung of a K-12 bureaucracy. So she asks and answers the question, why? So we're going to dig into that a little bit today. Why are teachers being blamed? Professionalization policies and the failure of reform in American history. All right. We're also today going to talk to Mike Lindell, chair of the Minnesota delegation at the Republican National Convention this week, and, of course, founder of MyPillow, the inventor himself. So We look forward to that conversation with our friend Mike, as always. You see, he's been in the news because he dare bring up a possible therapy for coronavirus. How dare he? Some innovative deal. I don't know that it's a prescribed medicine. I think it's a holistic thing you take. I can't remember all the details. We'll have him tell us a little bit about it. But he went on CNN with Anderson Cooper, and Anderson Cooper called him a snake oil salesman.
Huh. Yeah.
And we're surprised how? No.
No.
No. Daniel Stenberg is going to be here. Daniel is the McKenzie County Job Development Director. Why is the census important to cities, every city in North Dakota, but in his case, Watford City? What do we stand to lose when someone goes uncounted? I don't think this is a well-known part of the whole census story. I think there is, as there is in many things, concern about who are these people knocking on my door? Why do they want to know how many people live here? What do they do with that information? The census officials will tell you this information is a matter of dollars, grants, federal government programs coming into communities in North Dakota or not. And meanwhile, how that data is used. So we'll get the facts on that today. And Daniel Horowitz will be here. He's the author of Blitz, Trump Will Smash the Left and Win. He's also a former leftist militant. This guy was into some really bad stuff. And he saw the error of his ways and left that movement some years ago. So kind of interesting there, too. So Daniel Horowitz on his book. Did you see what happened in Wisconsin last night?
Terrible.
We have two dead now.
Yeah. One what were injured. Those lives worth?
Yeah. And do those lives matter? Those lives matter. To the credit of the family, they came out yesterday and said, stop this, you know, which unfortunately was not listened to. I think, you know, the man that was shot, we need to know more information about the whole situation, as in the George Floyd case. A snippet doesn't tell the whole story. I actually believe if the entire body cam footage available had not been suppressed by
whoever,
Keith Ellison, the AG of Minnesota, who is leading that prosecution and didn't want that information out. And they had to sue to get it released. It finally was released. But had it been out in the beginning, I don't think the whole Minneapolis anarchy would have been anywhere near as bad, because it's a very different situation. Now, I don't think any less of this officer, but I also want to hear his reasons for employing the tactics he did. Because if you go back to when they first approached his vehicle after having got a tip, he refuses cooperation in any form with law enforcement. Here's a real simple rule in my mind. Don't resist. Don't disregard the instructions of law enforcement. No matter how you feel like you've been wronged or whatever, if you do that, your chances of getting out of that conflict unharmed and alive are a heck of a lot better than what he did. And he resisted arrest. They tried to put him in a police car to take him in. He wouldn't go in.
He was brandishing a knife.
He said,
police just don't show up to kill people.
he said, I can't breathe, several times before he set it on the ground with a knee in his neck, because he was having some sort of a medical episode, probably induced by the fentanyl that was in his system. Does any of that mean he deserved to die? Absolutely not. But it does mean you were fed one version of that event that was different than reality, without full context. And is that the same thing in Kenosha, Wisconsin? I don't know. I'll tell you after we get the whole tape. I'll let you know then.
There you go.
But I'm glad his family came out and said, stop this. Melania Trump addressing it last night, Daniel Cameron as well, so that's good. We have a lot of highlights from last night. I don't even know where to begin, but we'll give you a chance to do it. You tell us what you think we ought to play, and we'll play some of them today on the program. You get to decide, okay? Take a break right here and come back with more on what's on your mind after a short timeout. We're going to tell you about Right at Home. Right at Home. Here's a question for you. Why on earth would you put your aging parent in a nursing facility after the coronavirus pandemic, when you've not seen or touched a loved one in months. If you're asking, well, what do I do with mom or dad? How do I keep them safe amongst their familiar surroundings? The team at Right at Home can help answer those challenging questions. From the moment you call, they'll work to understand your family's needs and listen to your concerns. So call. Find out about the right services when and where you need them. 701-997-0400. Online at rightathome.net/Fargo. rightathome.net/Fargo. More after this. Guesses is the wrong word. Suggestions on the best speech at the Republican National Convention last night. Melania, for sure. Actually, every single speaker was so great, says this listener. Another says Abby Johnson. Abby Johnson is a great story and told a good story. I like the AG from Kentucky, says another. Let's see here. Trump pops to 52%, says this listener. Best job approval rating on record, up with the black community and even Democrats. I don't know what poll that is. See if you can find that one. It's a listener telling us about a poll that he saw report in the Washington Examiner, but let us know where that's at. What's a Zogby poll? Okay, somebody else had a Zogby poll here. So interesting as well. Okay, more of your comments, and we're asking what you thought the best speech was so we can play a part of that later on in the program today. Mike Lindell will join us as well to talk about the speech. Our next guest has written a book about teachers and education. She is an assistant professor in educational foundations and research at the University of North Dakota. We enjoy our time with the experts at UND, our first opportunity to talk to D'Amico Polowitz. D'Amico, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Good morning. Please call me Diana. How are you?
Diana D'Amico Polowitz. I'll call you Diana. No problem. Sounds good. Thank you so much and appreciate the time. Explain to me what you mean by who's blaming teachers. Let's start there.
Yeah, that's a great question, right? And, you know, one of the things that I find in the book is that there has been this historical mantra that has played out again and again, and it's really gone something like, boy, public schools are important, right? We agree on that. That's a starting point of consensus. But we also kind of agree that the reason they're not doing better, it's those teachers, right? And here we've got everybody from policymakers, even parents, social commentators, politicians. And what stems from this sort of finger-pointing, is the next piece, which I think is really important, which is, gosh, if we only had more professional teachers, then we'd have better schools, communities, and maybe even nation. And from that equation, from that formula, has come a century of reform that teachers have kind of been set adrift in.
So I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say that, but what help me understand what a professional teacher would mean. To me, teachers have among the most important jobs in America, right? They are entrusted with a precious resource of our children to teach them, you know, to help them learn and grow. So darn important. Honestly, I care about the job they do, your teacher to student, more than I do how many degrees they have. But what does a more professional teacher mean?
Well, that's a great question, you know, and I think that over time, folks have given really different answers to that. I think that teachers have had their own answers. I think that administrators and policymakers have had their own answers, and that those answers have looked different over time. But what I will say is this, right, is that when we're talking about a profession, there are these kind of markers around expertise, authority, autonomy that we look to. And I think I'm going to agree with you, as I think most folks here who send their kids to public schools and who have been to them will agree that teachers are critical. But what I think we would also agree on is that teachers have not necessarily been treated like professionals by those markers of trusting their expertise, of giving them autonomy and authority. Instead, what we've seen is that teachers, their voice rarely is the one that's leading these conversations. We see that in school reopening plans right now, and that they're regulated by a range of reforms and people in a sort of towering bureaucracy.
So to do what you're suggesting is needed, what needs to happen?
Ah, well, you know, what I am suggesting is happening is, first of all, as a historian, I am just sort of, I am telling the story. I am bringing this to light. You know, I think one of the things that's really valuable about history is that, you know, we have this tendency to think that every problem we face is a new one, right? Every moment is a radical new moment that we've never looked at before. And what history can show us is that there are these patterns that have been playing out. Not that we need to we don't want to repeat the past, but that we are in this historical cycle. And if we want to understand where we are and how to move forward in a different direction, if that's what we want, we have to acknowledge that this is part of over a century of tradition. You know, if we really do take seriously the idea that we respect teachers, if we really do take seriously that teachers' expertise is critical and that we should be, that they should be leading these conversations, then we have to think about who has the controlling voice when we're making decisions. You know, I got to say, district leaders are in a tough spot right now, right? They're under pressure from politicians and parents, and they're developing reopening plans in the midst of all of this. But what they're doing across the nation, by and large, is offering bureaucratic solutions to pedagogical problems. And teachers are largely left out of that. They're standing on the sidelines with the rest of us, kind of wondering what's school going to look like. And now what we see is teachers, as these plans are being released, are scrambling to figure out, how do I teach in this context, in this situation that has been brokered by well-meaning folks, but folks who've not necessarily been in the classroom in a very long time, and some of them not ever.
Isn't that what a teacher's union is for? I've actually heard that at least the schools around this area, the teachers have had a voice. In fact, the teachers are part of the reason that some of the original plans were scaled back, because they expressed concerns and were brought forward. I mean, is that rare?
I think we're not seeing that uniformly, and I also think that what we're seeing is that the union having to step in and say, hey, you're not listening to teachers, right? The AFT announced a few weeks ago at their convention that if it comes down to it, if teachers are not feeling safe with plans, that they condone safety strikes. Right? It shouldn't have to come down to that. And I think the key is that the knee-jerk reaction is not to include teachers in these discussions, not to turn to teachers to lead us, but to sort of have these discussions in sort of an isolated way. And then the union is coming in, and I think they are a really important voice here, because if not for the union, we really wouldn't have this teacher role.
You wrote in your Washington Post column about this, that the school reopening debate reveals that we don't listen to teachers about schools. So again, the example of the coronavirus and reopening and how to teach during that and long distance learning and all of that, I get. Is there other examples where you don't feel like teachers are being heard by administrations?
Well, sure. You know, and what I want to suggest here is that, you know, since the formation of sort of our municipal public school system, so it was a long time ago, in the middle of the 19th century, we've got this teacher as savior and teacher as problem as two sides of the same historical coin, right? And there's a fine line here between praising teachers for being these self-sacrificing martyrs, which is where we were when we were in the spring, when parents were saying, gosh, having my kids at home is really hard. We've been that place in lots of other times, whether it's about, I can give more examples. But then the flip side of that sort of praising teachers for being that kind of martyr is blaming them for a host of school problems, particularly when they speak out, and calling them as greedy and self-interested, right? And so we see this over discussions of standardized testing. We see this over discussions about the sort of resources that schools need, and on and on.
Very interesting. 30 seconds left. Your book is obviously laying out what you see as a real problem. What would you suggest as a fix, as something that would fix it?
Yeah, I appreciate it. Let's talk to teachers. Let's get teachers leading these conversations, not on the sidelines, I'm skeptical of any plan, educational, COVID, school-related, if teachers aren't the ones leading us. I want to know what they have to say, what they think is best, and then I want us to come together and think about the resources they need to support them, right? How can we provide logistical support to their expertise?
All right. Enjoyed the conversation very much, Diana, D'Amico Paulowicz, thank you for the time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, likewise. Have a great day.
From the University of North Dakota today.